I want to address some advanced sales techniques for overcoming those testy little roadblocks that prevent you from closing the sale that we call objections. The two most frequently heard and most troublesome objections salespeople deal with are, number one, I need to think about it, and number two, I need to discuss it with someone else. Both of these are used by customers for the same purpose, to avoid making a decision now. They're stalling or delaying tactics. Who was it that said, the best defense is a good offense? In football, good offense begins with the quarterback. In sales, a good offense begins with the qualifier. The qualifier is our greatest defense against these two delaying techniques. If you want to be a master sales professional, it is absolutely mandatory you master the use of the qualifier. Let me insert a little disclaimer. Just because I have couched my introduction to the qualifier in combative terms, I don't want you to think of the customer as an opponent that must be defeated. In sales, as in life, we need to make a distinction between the person and what the person does. The person is never our opponent. The person is never the problem. However, what the person says can present a problem. It can prevent us from obtaining a decision. Everything we do in sales is designed to come to that moment of truth, decision time. A decision is a yes or a no. It's not a maybe. When someone says they have to think about it, they are saying maybe. Maybe is a decision not to make a decision. The problem with someone saying they have to think about it or discuss it with someone else is it's not something we can deal with. It's an objection, but one without a handle. If the objection is, I want to be the only realtor in there, then that objection has a handle. We can take hold of the objection by saying, if I guarantee you will be the only realtor, can we go ahead with it now? If they say the price is too high, then perhaps we can lower the price. These are objections we can deal with. But when the objection is not an objection, but is really a stall, then we must transform that delaying tactic into something we can deal with if we're going to close the sale. When someone gives an excuse not to buy, if we focus on the person instead of what the person said, we will probably fail to uncover the real reason they are not going ahead with the purchase. If we make the mistake of thinking the customer is the problem, someone that has to be defeated, then we get into a personal battle with them and we both lose. What I'm simply trying to do with the football analogy is to emphasize the importance of keeping your focus on what they say. I'm not trying to teach you how to effectively fight with the customer. I don't want you to fight with anyone. I do want to teach you how to effectively combat what they say if it's something that will prevent you from closing the sale. I'm focusing on these two objections because they're the two that you will hear most often. I'm assuming here, as I do throughout this program, that what you're selling is something that the buyer would be better off with than without. Therefore, you're not the buyer's adversary. You're there to help the buyer solve a problem. If that is not the case, then you need to quit selling what you're selling and find something to sell that has clear benefits and advantages for the buyer. If the customer really will be better off with the product than without it, then an unwillingness to purchase the product must be the result of insufficient information about the advantages to the buyer that the product offers. When the buyer does not realize he will be better off with the product, this lack of knowledge leads to fear of loss. The customer is fearful he will not get a sufficient return on his investment. He's afraid he will lose his money. This fear is preventing the customer from acquiring something that would be beneficial to him. All of the techniques I'm teaching you are tools you can use to help the customer overcome the fear so he can move forward on something he will be better off with than without. These tools are not given to you to use as clever ways to talk a customer into buying something that is not in his best interest. Here is something all master sales professionals have learned. You can't make anyone buy something they don't want, and it would be unethical to even try to do so. You can't win anything worth having through intimidation. I don't care how many books were sold to the contrary. If you will remember when I discussed the two fundamental factors, the product and the price, I said it's always a case of the product's appeal in relation to the price. The purpose of the presentation is to point out why the buyer is better off when he exchanges his money for the product. When the buyer understands that the features, advantages, and benefits that accrue to him when he acquires the product are more valuable to him than the money required to own the product, he will overcome his fear of loss and make the investment. What you do not want to do is waste your time giving the presentation to someone who either can't or won't give you a decision, no matter how good the product would be for him. Regardless of how many rebuttals or closes you know, you can't force a yes decision out of someone who is unwilling or unable to give you a decision. Therefore, we use the qualifier to make sure we are presenting to someone who, after we present it, is not going to raise an objection like, "I need to think about it," or "I need to discuss it with someone else before I can give you a decision." If you will remember what I said about the best time to deal with an objection is before it comes up, you will readily recognize that the best time to make effective use of the qualifier is while you're setting the appointment, that is, before you make the presentation. We use the qualifier to make sure the person we are setting an appointment with is not only willing to invest the time required to examine the evidence with regard to the features, advantages, and benefits, but also is willing to act on that evidence once you have presented it to him. And most importantly, he is the person with the authority to make that buying decision. So in other words, the qualifier is a winnowing tool you use to separate the men from the boys. Sorry, ladies, just trying to make a point. Anyone with an aunt who could do a valve job on a 1953 Ford and still owned her own limo service at age 75 would have to be blind to be a male chauvinist. The point is this. We use the qualifier as a tool to make sure we're not wasting our time making a presentation to someone who either can't or won't make a decision once we present the facts. This is an application of that old adage, work smarter, not harder. Effective use of the qualifier is probably the smartest thing you will ever do in sales. We want the customer to know in advance that we're not going to waste our time presenting the program to anyone who, after seeing the demonstration, has to think it over or discuss it with someone else before they can give a decision. We only want to present our program to decision makers who are willing to make decisions. Anyone who does not respect you for wanting to use your time wisely is not worthy of the time it would take to give them the presentation. They're just playing games. If you like playing games, go see them. If you like getting your job done, stay away from them. When we make our initial contact with a customer, whether in person by cold calling or by calling on the telephone, our purpose is to first tell them about what we have to offer, then to tell them the price, and then to make an appointment, or if we have cold called, to ask permission to make the presentation. But before we launch into the in-person presentation, we use the qualifier to make sure it won't be a waste of time to make the presentation. When it comes to using the qualifier, there are actually three options. You can soft qualify, hard qualify, or double qualify. I refer to these as soft cue, hard cue, and DQ, respectively. The soft cue goes like this. Once you see it, if you like it, is there anyone else that would need to see it if you wanted to go ahead with it? This is good because it should tell you if there is a partner or a spouse that has to be consulted before a decision can be made. Here's a hard cue I have used with good results. If I can answer all your questions to your satisfaction, that this is the right program at the right price and at the right time, are you personally in a position to give an order today, and would you be willing to do so? Here's another hard cue I might use. Let me be sure I understand. If this program meets all your needs, is there any reason why you would not give me a decision today? Here's an example of using the DQ, the double qualifier. Once you see it, if you like it and feel it will benefit your business, is there anyone else who needs to see it to go ahead with it today? When the customer says, "No, I'm the decision maker," you say, "Since you're the one who decides, and because I need to get this finished, if I show it to you and if it's what you're looking for, can we go ahead with it today?" If they raise a specific objection while you're asking for the appointment, it might be appropriate to say, "If you can be completely satisfied in this area, is there anything else that would prevent you from going ahead with it today?" If price is raised as an objection, you might say, "If you could convince yourself that the price is more than fair and the program would return its investment many times over, would you have any objection to going ahead with a yes decision today?" It should be obvious to you that the soft cue is good, the hard cue is better, and the DQ is the best. You decide which you want to be. I personally prefer using the DQ in a manner that splits the soft cue from the hard cue. I will typically use the soft cue fairly early in my conversation with the customer. For example, if I've called on the phone, I'll ask the rhetorical question, "Would you consider going ahead with this if you felt it would benefit you?" If he says anything other than no, I will say, "And of course, I'm not looking for a decision on the telephone. I figured I would call you to tell you about it, naturally tell you the price, then come by and show it to you. Is that fair enough?" When they say that's fair, then I'll soft cue to find out if they're the sole decision maker. I'll say, "Once you see it, if you like it, is there anyone else who would need to see it if you wanted to go ahead with it?" If they say they have a partner who has to see it and the partner is out of town for a month, I don't waste any time giving them the rest of the telephone presentation or the introductory questions. I just tell them that we're running out of time. I say goodbye and call someone else. If they say, "Yes, I'm the one who makes the decision," I'll continue with an explanation of the product. I'll discuss a range of prices, and then I'll hard cue to make sure I'm dealing with someone who is willing to give me a yes or no decision today. I'll say, "Once I show it to you, if you like it, is there anything that would prevent you from giving us a yes decision today?" By doing the DQ in a split manner like this, I have really used my time wisely to find someone who is both able and willing to give me a decision today. There will be times when the person you're qualifying is just curious about what you're doing, and when you hard cue, they will say something like, "Well, I just need to see it." Then I'll say, "Mr. Jones, I remember when I was a kid, any time my father gave me a job to do, he would say, 'Johnny, if a job is worth doing, it's worth doing right the first time. Don't waste your time having to do it twice.' Mr. Jones, isn't that what you teach your employees to do?" If he says yes, I continue with, "Then I'm sure you'll respect me for wanting to use my time wisely, because we're coming up against our deadline. Now, if you don't like it or don't think it will help you, just tell me no. But if you do like what you see, is there anything that would prevent us from going ahead with it today?" Sometimes I'll ask the qualifier, and the person will say, "Yes, I can help you with that." It's something about the way they say it that makes me think they're not being totally straight with me. So I'll ask, if you like it, are you the one who signs the checks? If they're not the decision maker, they might say, well, no, I don't. Then I'll say, who does sign the checks? That's the owner, Harry. Can I speak with Harry, please? Some will even lie about being the decision maker because they have such fragile egos, they don't want to admit they're not the top dog. Or it might be a case where the father has given the son responsibility for running the business, but not the authority to make the money decisions. That's unfair to the son. Don't be unfair to yourself and put yourself in the middle of their conflict by presenting to a son that will always be more fearful of what daddy might do. That's what I referred to earlier as a bad habit. We need to practice good habits, and using the qualifier is a good habit. In fact, next to what you say and how you say what you say, using the qualifier is the single most important tool in selling. You must not avoid it. If you've expended a considerable amount of energy prospecting and making your initial contact with your introductory questions, and then you skip the qualifier and jump right into the presentation, only to find out after all this effort, you're talking with someone who has to discuss it with his wife or someone who always has to sleep on it before he makes a decision, you've wasted a lot of valuable time. Now, that does not mean the qualifier will eliminate all those dreadful, I have to think about it, roadblocks to closing the sale, but it will eliminate most of them. And if you've qualified the buyer before you make the presentation and they still say they have to think about it or have to discuss it with someone else when you ask the obligating question, you simply say, well, let me go over it one more time. There must be something I did not cover adequately because you did tell me that you would be willing to go ahead with it today if you liked it. And you just said that you liked it. Tell me, sir, were you sincere when you said you liked the concept? If the customer says yes, then I would say, actually, sir, when it comes to this, there are only two things to think about, either the concept or the cost. And since you just confirmed that you like the concept, it obviously is the cost that is causing you to hesitate. Suppose I could save you a substantial amount off the regular price. Would that help you out? When they say yes, that would help, explain why you might be willing to adjust the price and proceed to close the sale. Now, if that seems too confrontational for you, or if you have failed to use the qualifier, try what I said when a hair salon owner in Flagstaff, Arizona told me she needed to think about it. I smiled and said, I'm delighted you want to think about it, because obviously you would not devote your time thinking about it unless you were seriously considering it. Therefore, I assume you want to think about it in order to eliminate the possibility of making an error. Is that true? She said yes. Then I said, Molly, as a practical matter, wouldn't you agree that the length of time you spend thinking about something has less to do with the accuracy of your decision than does the careful examination of the materials while they're in front of you and fresh in your mind so you can consider the benefits you might receive from the program? Now, really, that's the most important thing, isn't it? She said, I suppose so. I said, with that in mind, Molly, why don't we invest a few more minutes and think about it together so you can be absolutely sure we do arrive at the best possible decision for you? Is that fair enough? She said, okay. And I went on to point out that every business has the same problem. They need customers. And I showed her how one customer would result in an increase more than enough to pay for the ad. I concluded the sale by saying, Molly, you know, when it comes to making a decision on this, there are only four things to think about. Number one, do you like it? Number two, do you want it? Number three, can you afford it? And finally, when is the best time for your business to get the benefits this will bring, now or later? I tried this approach with the owner of Miracle Ear in Valdosta, Georgia, and he was a little hesitant about investing a little more time together. So I said, do you agree whenever we make a decision about anything, we need the facts in order to make an intelligent decision? He said, yes. And I proceeded by pointing out that when a business advertises in print, they're trying to convert readers to customers. And in order to do that, a publication would have to have readers. To show we had lots of readers, I read several letters from readers who love the publication. Then I read letters from readers which illustrated how eager they are to do business with the advertisers. Finally, I read letters from advertisers who have renewed their ad over and over, and we completed the sale. Remember, people do not buy from you based on what you have told them or what you have shown them. They buy based upon what you have told and shown that they believe. As far as your potential customer is concerned, what a person who has used the product says about it in a testimonial letter is far and away more believable than what you might say. And if you show them how much revenue can result from one new customer based upon the figures that they gave you when you asked them what one good customer means to them, they find it undeniably convincing.